I'm David Amano. You're listening to The Fifth Floor. Have you ever wondered if you would know if you were living in a golden age? Surely they always got to be long past, don't they? And at least that way, hey, we not only get to tell a mesmerizing story, but to transpose ourselves back in time too. Here's the latest in our series about golden ages, and it comes from Angie Ghanem in Cairo.
After thinking about it, I felt like many Egyptians that the era of the ancient Egyptian civilization is what most of us Egyptians would see or would like to see as our golden age. The big question is, how did they build the pyramids, for example? Also, the kind of organization you see in areas where, you know, pharaohs used to live by the Nile, in Upper Egypt, in Nubia, which is Aswan and Sudan now, how they arranged their life that early on. All of these achievements, also the Golden Age, was really a time of prosperity and education, and you become more and more impressed about how were they able to achieve all of this at such an early time in history. In Egyptian schools, we study them in details, achievements, ups and downs, important kings, all sorts of stuff taught to you over many years. We are connected. As much as we are connected to the Arab heritage, there are still connection with the Pharaonic heritage. So there are some meals like afoul, which is beans and sun bread. It's a Pharaonic meal, and it's still cooked the same way as our ancestors done it thousands of years ago. There are some celebrations that are still happening, like we celebrate Nile Feast and another celebration called Shem en Nisim, which is a kind of spring coming. These are the same as the pharaohs did celebrate them, so they are still celebrated today. So many traditions and habits have survived all these thousands of years. Tutankhamun is the most remembered king in the Egyptian ancient history. It was the golden age, and gold was really used big time in making his tomb, in making his statues, in everything around him. And they've put lots of gold and monuments when they buried him. They put it with him. And that's why he occupies almost an entire floor in the Egyptian museum. Lots of people know the picture. Also, the box itself has a beautiful drawing of his face, all in gold, which you can still see the lively colors until now. So all of this, although that on the ground, he didn't achieve much. He didn't have time to achieve much. He died really young. But historically wise, he is really remembered, and he's become a symbol for the entire civilization. When you open the Egyptian TV, you would flip through channels, and you definitely will see someone wearing, you know, pharaonic garments or something, you know, any kind of school celebration. You would find at least three or four kids wearing the Tutankhamun, for example, costume. Politically, it's used both in positive and negative context. So if someone starts talking about how great we were as Egyptians and that it was time when it was peaceful, with tolerance, united, advanced on all levels, and that's important times for us and we need to go back to these times. Some people went as far as trying to do DNA tests and have sort of conclusions that Egyptians are Egyptians, they're not Arab, the Arab influence is just outside. Politically, the word pharaoh, Pharaon, on its own like this, is negative, because they're always saying that Egypt is the only civilization that created the semi-god, semi-ruler. This is used politically as something negative, that Egyptians tend to have absolute rulers who accept no questioning or discussion, because initially they see themselves as gods or semi-gods, so no one can discuss political issues with God.
And that piece from Angie Ghanem, a journalist with BBC Monitoring in Cairo. Now,